welcome to the ProWrestling.net Almost Live with me, Hayden Gleed.
And me, Darren Guthridge.
And this is a very British SummerSlam preview.
Incredibly British, if I do say so myself. I've even put my little finger in the air.
Are you drinking tea, by chance?
Orange juice, which isn't the most British of things, but...
No.
I'm not a big tea drinker. It's a very common myth that everyone thinks we all drink tea. And the vast majority of us do, but I don't.
Do you know what? It's actually quite strange. This sounds like a setup, but I don't drink tea either, because literally at work, they all make rounds of cups of teas, and I'm just there going, can I have some water, please? And they just look at me as if I'm, you know, weird.
Odd. Plus, since I am allergic to milk, so that kind of hinders me when I'm out and about wanting to drink tea. So, wow, this is a really, really British SummerSlam preview.
It is. Jolly good. So how are you, Darren?
I'm okay, but are we going to be okay, Hayden?
What do you mean?
Because, you know, we both supporters of football teams.
Of course.
You, the great Cardiff City, and myself, the great West Bromwich Albion. Yes, we do play in the same league as we do play in the same league as Chelsea, as one confused American guy when I was over there thought we didn't. So I was like, West Bromwich Albion, in the same league as Chelsea? Yeah, I've never heard of you. So we've been there for 4 years. Anyhoozle, we're about to buy your goalkeeper.
No, you're not. He played in the game against Blackburn this week. So I am absolutely 100% convinced he's not going anywhere because West Brom are not a good enough team for him to go to. And that's me and you falling out.
Okay, we're not going to get on. Great. It's Brett and Bulldog at the 92 SummerSlam? All over again. Was that the one in Wembley?
That was the one in Wembley, 1992.
I was 1.5.
Oh, God, that makes me feel so old.
Sorry, bro.
But yeah, in all seriousness, I think you guys can do a lot worse than David Marshall. And to be honest, he's been a good servant to us, and we're in the league below yourselves. You're in the top league, we're in the one from top. So if he goes to you guys, then all the best to him. He's been a great servant to us.
Sweet. Soccer banter, people. That is how we're starting tea and soccer.
I can be very, very civil and very grown up when I need to be, but you know, it's only because I got a microphone in front of me. At the moment, I'm sending you a text message with lots of swear words.
Great. Well, we haven't brought up the English and Welsh thing, so save the true hate for later on when we have to play that card.
I'm sure that'll be brought up later on. Anyway, we are here, of course, to talk about what's happening on the evening you are listening to this audio in Brooklyn, New York, and also the Summer Extravaganza SummerSlam, which is tomorrow. But before we get into that, I just want to take a moment to talk about the ProWrestling.net sale that is going on at the moment. For the price of $1, you can have a month's access to ProWrestling.net and all the perks that membership brings you, including hours and hours of audio each week with shows such as the Pretentious Podcast with Will and Jake, every wrestling company's TV shows covered in audio and written form, including Darren and I covering ROH every Friday for you lovely, lovely people out there. Jason Powell also does a Q&A audio with members' questions, and Zach Zimmerman gets together with the Pruitts to record the Millennials with Attitude, where they are watching the Attitude Era week by week and taking a retrospective look at the shows, both the good and the bad. Of course, our flagship show is .NET Weekly, which is head honcho Jason Powell and a guest, either one of the staff or people such as Brian Fritz or Jim Ross, co-hosting the show, which is a review of the news week. Other perks of membership include ad-free access to the website, access to the members forum, and if you have a smartphone, you can log in there and get all the perks of membership on your phone. As I said, it's currently $1, which is about, I think it's about 70 pence for all our British listeners. That's 70 pence less than a McDonald's hamburger. Fight the fat like I am. Why would you not take this offer up? Give us a try, and I'm sure you'll be impressed. If you want to take up this offer, go to the main page at ProWrestling.net, click the link on the top right where it says membership info, go through the sign-up process, and before you make the payment, put in the coupon code 2015DOLLAR. That's 2015DOLLAR, all one word. If you have any queries or problems using this code, then by all means contact Jason Powell at .netjason@gmail.com. Darren, We were both members before we became staff members, and I think you'll agree that for $1 or for 70 pence here in the UK, people will definitely be getting their money's worth.
Definitely. There's no doubt about that, because just for the audio you're going to get alone this week, it's worth the 70p, let alone the rest of the audio you're going to get on top of that. So, yeah, the podcasts are fantastic. There's a lot put out in the week, so you will not be left wanting for things to listen to. And the forum's great, the ad-free access is great, it's all great.
And we have a lot of fun as well with the audio. We try because we all get on, and we are all friends. Me and you have met, and we actually get on. So, you know, it's like listening to friends bantering, basically.
We need to stop using the word banter.
We do.
With immediate effect.
With immediate effect. Right, moving into the show. Darren, how excited are you going into this weekend with the amount of wrestling and the potential for some great shows?
Very excited. I know they've tried to build this as like the WrestleMania of the summer, and they've really pushed the boat out this year. I'll give them kudos for that. I wouldn't say I'm at WrestleMania hype levels, just because, you know, there's a certain prestige and grandeur that goes along with WrestleMania. You kind of get going to autopilot into that mood around that time of the year. So I'm not that high, but this is the most hype I've been for a SummerSlam in a good long while. Of the big four pay-per-views, this is usually my least favourite, but this year they've really turned it around.
I know it's a side note, but why is it usually your least favourite? It's usually one of my favourites.
Well, I the Royal Rumble match itself is the match I actually look forward to the most in the year. So,
it's
and
unique.
The Royal Rumble's always near my it is. It's always near my birthday. I was born on a WrestleMania on a Royal Rumble Sunday in 1991. It actually happened on the Saturday, but that crossed over into Sunday. It's all good. And I like the concept of Survivor Series more. And I always feel like they try and build up SummerSlam, but it's always false. They're kind of, you know, blowing their own trumpet, but they haven't actually gone to town with the hype. I can't say that for them this year, though. So hopefully they do the same for the other two, and they really don't, you know, push the kind of whole weekend worth of festivities for Survivor Series and the Royal Rumble as well.
I've got to agree with you in terms of it's not as big as WrestleMania, despite how much they're building it. But why I'm excited about this weekend is that they've put an NXT show around the weekend. I think with WrestleMania this year, they only had, I think it was one match, was it, in the in Access. So this it becomes like a festival of wrestling. I know it's WWE sort of banner, but they're sort of making it a destination for wrestling. And then you've got ROH as well running a show in the area. And I got to be honest, Darren, I'm gutted I'm not going.
So am I. You look at the just a sheer amount of wrestling. That's just from Ring of Honor and WWE. There'll be other wrestling shows out there. Every Tom, Dick and Harry in the wrestling world will be heading down to Brooklyn this weekend to try and grab all the extra dollar that's floating around. Yeah, you got a good point. And now with the network, you have to feel that if this goes well, which it seems to be going that way, everyone's talking about SummerSlam for once. You have to think this is a great way to hook people into the network. You get them on that free month subscription deal they do. That will take you up to a big four pay-per-view, and then it's up to them to sell you at that big weekend to then carry on. It's a very smart business idea, and I hope it's something that catches on.
Yeah, definitely, because I was actually supposed to go to SummerSlam. I actually saved up for the last 18 months to go to SummerSlam, and then I've had a few job issues, shall we say, over the last 8 months, and I've had to use all my savings, so I didn't get to go, so I am absolutely gutted. But my personal moaning aside, let's kick off our preview and predictions. I meant to say at the top, this show is not actually live. I know it's .NET live, but we're actually pre-recording this, so unfortunately we won't be able to take your calls. But what we're going to do is we're going to go through the NXT card, first of all, and then we're going to go through the SummerSlam card afterwards. So based on the .NET tradition, Darren, on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you for the NXT show?
I put me a solid, I'm going to go 8 out of 10. I am a big fan of NXT, as anyone who sees the site. I write the hit list, I watch it every week. It's probably the only wrestling show outside of Ring of Honor that I watch in full without skipping any bits. So, big fan. And they've done a nice job of building up some of the events. I don't think it's the hottest takeover we've ever had, but it does feel like the biggest. And on a side note, be happy that this isn't .NET. Live, the true version, because if you were phoning us, It would be 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And ask Sim, you do not want to be on the phone to me at 3 a.m. in the morning. I am not a happy bunny at that time in the morning. When we used to have to record NXT shows at that time, I was a grumpy goose. So be happy about that.
I could say something really mean right now, but I'm just gonna leave that out there. I'm exactly the same as you. I'm at an 8. It does lose something, and I know it's not WWE or NXT's fault, but without Sami Zayn and without Hideo Itami, it does bring it down slightly. But at the same time, a lot of the stories that they have been building are reaching their conclusion at this show, and I just got a feeling that every single match has the potential of, even though we're excited about the match, of even exceeding our expectations. So a solid 8. I completely agree with you there. So we're both excited about the show. So let's go through the card. First of all, Darren, we need to talk about Apollo Crews, formerly Yuha Nation. As of recording, we don't know his official opponent, but it's rumored to be Ty Dillinger, but that's not been confirmed. So I don't want to confirm or say that that's confirmed. For the people who haven't seen Apollo Crews, Darren, how would you describe him?
Unbelievable athleticism. There's no other word. We both saw him. We went to watch the Ring of Honor shows late last year, and he was on the card. He actually won the title that night, I believe so. So, yeah, he's freakishly athletic for a guy of his size. You look at him and you think he's going to be, you know, your typical big guy, basically. You think he's going to be, he'll be strong and he'll show his strength, but he's going to be quite immobile, but far from it. His finishing move is the moonsault into the standing shooting star press. That is not something a man of that size
should be able to do.
No, so he is phenomenal. Promo wise, we didn't see anything at the Ring of Honor show, and he's been okay in his backstage interviews. He's coming off very relatable, but I don't know, he didn't come off very pro wrestling. It came off just he's a nice guy, and he's coming to beat you with a smile on his face. So when he gets out there with a live mic in his hand, that may change. But I am very hyped to see what Apollo Crews gets done in his first appearance on NXT.
That's the word that comes to mind when I've seen his backstage promos, is the fact he's very likable, sort of likable assassin. That's the sort of role I see him in terms of he's likable as a person, but then when he's in the ring, he's all business. And I'm just excited for the people who haven't seen him, because they are in for a treat. If he's anything as good as he was in the PCW ROH show that we went to, I've never been as impressed on first sight of a wrestler as I was with Apollo Crews. So that's going to be fun. And thank you, Darren, for not mentioning me dancing to his theme music at the show.
I am so annoyed that we're not getting the UR Nation music, because that thing was glorious.
The first match that we do know that's been officially set is Jushin Thunder Liger versus Tyler Breeze. First of all, there's a lot to talk about with this, but first of all, talk about the match and who do you think will come out on top?
In the Battle of the Entrances, which again, caveat, Jushin Thunder Liger better have his usual entrance music. It's unlikely, I know, but that it's the most Japanese thing you'll ever hear. It's fantastic. I'm really looking forward to this match. I know that Jushin Thunder Liger is no young cat anymore, but every time he's turned up in Ring of Honor, which has been quite frequently over the last year or so, he's brought the thunder. He wrestles smartly. He doesn't wrestle like a 25-year-old anymore. He wrestles like a 50-year-old, but he wrestles smart. He had a great match with Adam Cole for the Ring of Honor world title at last year's War of the Worlds shows. Fantastic. And I think Tyler Breeze is hopefully going to step up his game, realise the kind of historical match this is. This is Jushin Thunder Liger's first ever match in WWE. So I hope he steps up to the plate and brings it. I'm quietly confident this could be maybe not a show stealer, but I think people will be talking about this match after the fact.
And who do you think is going to come out on top? Do you think it's going to be I'll say who I think now. I'd be very surprised if Tyler Breeze doesn't come out on top of this, simply because he is the mainstay on NXT and needs to win. You know, whereas Jushin Liger is only an attraction, and even if he sticks around, he'll be more on a mentor sort of type basis.
See, I think the opposite. I think I'd be surprised if Jushin Thunder Liger didn't win, because Tyler Breeze has been, they've not been shy about having Tyler Breeze lose matches.
No.
And, you know, Jushin Thunder Liger coming in. Now, admittedly, we all thought Sting was going to win his first ever WWE match, and we all see how that went down. So maybe that's just Triple H's thing now, and we should look forward to it. But, no, I think Tyler Breeze could absorb the loss, and I think he'd want to do the job to Jushin Thunder Liger, let him have his victory. And who knows, they could always come back to it the next takeover. They could always come back to have a rematch, and then Tyler Breeze can get his win. But I'd be surprised if Jushin Thunder Liger lost here.
I know what you mean. I suppose it all depends on how long Jushin Liger is hanging around. And that sort of brings us on to the next topic. With Jushin appearing on NXT, what do you think this means for the relationship between New Japan and ROH?
Shaky at best is how I'd put it. They obviously know that Ring of Honor isn't like tanking. They're not doing a TNA right now. They're holding fine, and they make good use of the Japanese talent. Whenever the Japanese talent is on Ring of Honor, they are highlighted to the nth degree. I don't think Jushin Thunder Liger is going to receive that level of treatment. He's not going to be in the main event, etc., etc. So they're probably going to be a bit peeved, but to on top of that, this is Jushin Thunder Liger. He did appear in WCW. He's not one of their top guys. If this was Okada or Nakamura, then yeah, I think they'd be very, very angry. But I know it's kind of flippant to say this, but it is just Jushin Thunder Liger. It's going to be interesting to see where it plays out, but I don't think this will be the straw that breaks the camel's back, personally.
I actually think that one of the most fascinating parts of the weekend in terms of ROH is because of the heat that potentially could be there between ROH and New Japan because of Jushin Liger. I'm looking forward to seeing how they actually use the Japanese talent on their cards, because ROH are running shows this weekend that includes some of the bigger names from New Japan. But I'm sure there's agreements between the companies. I mean, the talent can't be jobbed out, but if there is any frustration there, it could be quite interesting about how it all works out.
I'd say that Ring of Honor better be careful, because let's face it, Ring of Honor needs New Japan a lot more than New Japan needs Ring of Honor. So I'm not saying they have to wilt and cower and not kind of hold up their end of the, you know, put up a good fight or anything, but they better be careful, because if they go hammer and tongs after New Japan and say, how dare you do this, we have this working relationship, they could be in trouble. The most people ever talk about Ring of Honor is around those Japanese shows, so they're walking a tightrope at the moment, so it might be better to concede this battle to win the war.
It's definitely going to be interesting. It's definitely going to be an interesting weekend. Next up, Samoa Joe against Baron Corbin. Do you think, like I do, that the winner of this match depends on how high management is on Samoa Joe?
Maybe. Because Triple H has always put up a kind of defence for Baron Corbin. Whether it's genuine or not, and he's genuinely that high on him, I don't know. But they have to be, they have to know that Joe holds more value at this point. And to have him lose to Baron Corbin seems idiotic to me, because then Joe signed the contract now. It's not a ironclad developmental contract or anything, but he is under WWE contract to some form or another. So you've got to think they will eventually move him to the main roster. I don't think he's going to stick around NXT, and if he does, that's a foolish move. So I think they'll be smart enough and as high on Joe as I perceive them to be that they'll think we can't have him lose to Baron Corbin, of all people. They've built Baron Corbin up, by all means, but no one's really a fan. He's not like this is some incredibly hot rookie who could be the next John Cena or Randy Orton or whoever. This is Baron Corbin. So I hope logic wins the day here and Samoa Joe goes over.
That's exactly what I'm predicting. Is Samoa Joe going over Baron Corbin? Because I know there's people talking about there might be heat on Samoa Joe for what happened to Tyson Kidd and all that, but we haven't really heard anything coming out, and everyone that is speaking about it seems to say that it is seen backstage that it was just a fluke accident. So I don't think there'll be any heat on him or any sort of repercussions for him for what happened. So I'm going to predict Samoa Joe here, and I think this will be the start of the push that maybe will take him to the main roster, but at least towards the top of the card in NXT.
I agree. I think a loss could actually benefit Baron Corbin, maybe not as much as a win over Samoa Joe would do, but I think in a loss he can lose his first match, he can get it out of his system. Well, of course he lost a lot before he became the Lone Wolf. He lost a lot, but he can get this out of his system, and maybe we can see some character development. He'll get angry. If he has a long match here, that sets the precedent that he can now have longer matches than the 4 seconds we've been getting, which is insulting, if I'm to be quite frank, that they sent him out for 4 weeks straight to have the exact same match. I understand the purpose of it, but that doesn't mean I have to like it.
Exactly. And do you think Joe will be able to get a good match out of Baron Corbin? Because he's not the most agile of big men, but at the same time, he's not the most lumbering of big men either. He's sort of that in between at the moment.
I'd say I'm on the fence leaning towards no, because this will be the first time we ever see Baron Corbin have a proper match against a capable opponent. I think he wrestled Neville once. I may be wrong on that one. If he did, the match hasn't exactly stuck in my head. And, you know, when he's worked other takeover shows, it's been against Rhino, who's fine, but they're similar by types. Or, you know, he killed Bull Dempsey for like a few takeovers in a row. This will be a good test. This will be a good litmus test to see how far he's progressed. And if Joe can't get even like a serviceable match out of him, it's time to start panicking. And, you know, they've really got to start figuring out how they're going to book him, because right now he has nuclear go-away heat, and I don't think he's about to do a Bo Dallas, if I'm honest.
Next up, we have the NXT Women's title match, which is Sasha Banks against Bayley. Do we see the female version of the Sami Zayn story here?
I think so, but I think that my confidence comes from me reading into all the external factors of, you know, Sasha Banks going to the main roster. She's Bayley has just beaten all of the call-ups. She's just beaten Becky Lynch and Charlotte on TV. So that seems to be logical. And I think the time is right now for Bayley to win this title. But having said that, my insider knowledge, the knowledge of the spoilers from NXT where Sasha Banks came out with the NXT Women's title on a show that was going to air after TakeOver Brooklyn, that's clouding my judgment. I hope it's a red herring, but yeah, if I was going to put money on anything, I'd think this is Bayley's time.
Well, what I would say to that is go back to, I think it was 1994, Lex Luger came out with the WWF Championship at that time for a show that was recorded before WrestleMania that was going to air after WrestleMania. And it was definitely a red herring, as we all know, coming out of that show. So it wouldn't be the first time that WWE have pulled the trick of recording a show that is after a major event and fooling the crowd and the people who got the spoilers out, basically. So I don't because of that alone, I don't read too much into that, to be quite honest.
I'd really, really like to think that they're smarter than this, because they know that most of the people watching NXT and pretty much all the people reading the spoilers are going to be the type of fans looking out for such things. They have to know that the internet fan's going to have heard the news that she turned up with the Divas title, with the women's title, and that another person comes out with a title that isn't his later on in those set of tapings. So hopefully it's two curveballs. I have an idea of how they could get to the other thing in the spoiler in the tapings. We'll get to that in a moment. But yeah, hopefully it's a red herring. And I think this could get popper the night if Bayley wins the title, because
definitely
we are all ready for Bayley. She's one of the only people whose entrance music makes me smile automatically. I love Bayley. I adore Bayley. I am more than ready for her to have gold. I don't want a long championship reign. I don't think she's that type of champion, but I am ready for a bit of glory for Bayley.
We've already talked about the word likable, and that definitely suits Bayley completely, because she's I don't know if this is the right way of putting it, but she's just so adorable. She's just you know, you just want to give her a big hug, you know. So you know, I completely and totally agree. And if this is the fairy tale ending to the story, then I personally think it's the right one to do at this point, because they've built it up to this point, and it just sucks the air out of the room if they don't.
I wouldn't say that, because Banks is still fairly over. I don't think they'll boo at the building or there'll be stony silence, but it's definitely the lesser of the two finishes I think Brooklyn is going to want to see. Because if you've seen the journey of Bayley, you can't help but hope that she's going to win a title right now.
Next up is a match that I don't personally have much opinion on, to be quite honest. So we should get past this one quite quickly. It's Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy versus the Von Villains for the NXT Tag Team title match. You go, Darren, because I
right. Whoa. You're not into the Vaude Villains.
Not in the slightest.
Oh, my God. Right. Okay. Okay. Oh, they're not for everybody. I am well into the Vaude Villains action. Have been for some time. It's taken a few of us to kind of come around. They did have a very good... The match that set up this kind of match... the match that set up this match, even... they had their strongest showing yet as a tag team. And I just get a kick out of the act. So I'm actually looking forward to this match quite a bit. Blake and Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy, just they're not doing it for me. They kind of rode that crest of hype when we all couldn't believe they were tag titles, tag team champions even. And that's very much fizzled out now. Alexa Bliss is the best part of the act by a mile. I think it's going to be a good match. I think the Vaude Villains are going to win the title here.
Don't get me wrong. I think the match will be decent. It's just I just don't care about. Well, I don't care about four of the people in the match. Alexa Bliss, as you said, has been great in her role, but I just got no emotion towards either four. The Vaude Villains I enjoyed as a novelty for about 2 weeks, and then after that, I was just like, oh, no.
I have faith in them. Do you not like the manly bang spot? Do you not like that?
No.
are you not intrigued about which who are they going to bring to help neutralize Alexa Bliss?
No.
BT Dubs, my prediction is that it's going to be Blue Pants because the NXT crowd will love that to pieces. Okay. I'll admit defeat here, but just as a word of warning, you know the motto is, as Zim has probably told you, Darren Guttridge is always right eventually. I know the Vaude Villains are going to be awesome, in the same way that I knew New Day all along were going to be awesome. I am at the moment being proved very right on that fact, so hopefully the Vaude Villains will not let me down either.
And we'll get to the New Day and allow you the floor to mock the people who doubted you. But my prediction for this match, I don't know, Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy, I guess, to retain. I don't know what it is about NXT and the tag division, because they seem to get a bit of steam together and then they just seem to just fall into a funk with it. And I don't mean to be disrespectful in any way to the tag team division or any of these competitors, but if I don't care about any of them, then this will be my obligatory go to the fridge match.
Okay, but for the longest time, I would 100% agree with you. But that last set of tapings, that they have started to make steps towards building an actual division, because they've now got Gable and Jordan as a team. They're now working with the Mechanics actually as a tag team. You've still got Enzo and Cass in that mix. There's obviously they've noticed the problem and they're now trying to fix it. It's not going to be a quick fix, but considering the two teams are both heels that I've mentioned, that's why I think maybe the Vaude Villains go over here and they kind of sit on top of that division. I don't think they're going to be called up anytime soon, so I think they could sit on the top of that division for at least the next 6 months whilst they kind of establish the tag division underneath them.
Next up is a match that I'm sure both of us can agree that we're really looking forward to, which is a ladder match for the NXT title between Finn Balor, who is the champion, against Kevin Owens. First of all, how awesome is the entrance going to be in that size arena?
I haven't actually thought of that. It could be really cool. It could kind of lose something in such a big... arena. Not to compare these two entrances at all, but Adam Rose's entrance kind of lost a little thing when you couldn't quite generate the it's a lot easier to generate the atmosphere in a smaller building than it is a larger building. So this is kind of going to be a test for how Finn Balor does on when he gets called up to the main roster, if he can kind of bring the macabre kind of fantastic vibe to the large arenas. It's going to be interesting. I hadn't actually thought of that.
I know your point, but I just can't believe that you just compared Finn Balor and Adam Rose.
I know, but you get where I'm coming from.
I do. But the thing is that the entrance in itself is starting to get over, let alone how great Finn Balor is, you know.
But okay, I am looking forward to it, but you've just put another thought into my head. He's got a lot longer ramp to walk down this time. Are we going to be approaching Undertaker levels of entrance now?
That wouldn't be such a bad thing. I don't think.
Are you kidding me? It's already too elaborate on NXT, and that's like a quarter of the size of the normal ramp. He's got to come all the way down the ramp and all the way into the ring. That could be 5 minutes. That could be 10 minutes if he really goes for the over-the-top reaction.
The thing is, if it's the WWE, then yes, I would agree. But because it's NXT, and they know that the entrance is a big part of Finn Balor's sort of entrance, I got confidence in the NXT production staff and crew to come up with some clever, innovative sort of way of not making it seem not as special as if it was a shorter ramp, if you know what I mean. I've just got more faith that in NXT they'll work around that.
If he flies in like Gene Simmons from Kiss, then that would be okay. They are both the demon after all.
Indeed. So as for the concept of the ladder match, you and me were exchanging notes about this, because I've got a notorious bad memory and I couldn't remember why it was the ladder match. So you reminded me that it's because Kevin Owens is concerned that there might be a repeat of the Montreal Screwjob, so he wants to take the referee out of the equation. What do you think of that that logic behind having a ladder match?
Flimsy, I think. I you can always read into that Kevin Owens is just putting forward, you know, he's picking and choosing the words he wants to put forward to make it seem like he's up against it. And yeah, he said, I'm from Montreal, therefore they're trying to screw me. That's just the way of the world in wrestling. Flimsy, but I'm okay with the outcome. Yeah, it's not the most well laid plan, but it means we get a ladder match, so I'm okay with it.
And what I like about it is the fact that, even though I do agree with you that the explanation is somewhat flimsy, they did make an effort to explain it. You know, there's been so many times over the last 10 years when there's been a stipulation in the match in on the main roster, and we just don't know why it's there. So I do appreciate the fact that they did make an effort to try and tie it together. Mm-hmm. As for the actual match, first of all, what do you think the quality is going to be? And second of all, who's going to come away as champion?
When it comes to quality, there's two things sticking in my head. One, Finn Balor has said that this is his first ever ladder match. Yeah. And I can't imagine everybody's first ladder match goes well. So I'm not putting hurdles in front of them, but if that's a strange and alien environment to you, that is a big piece of apparatus you've got to work around. So whether that hinders him or not, maybe. And the other thing they may have to keep in mind is that Kevin Owens has got to go and wrestle the next night. So I don't think they can afford for it to be Demolition Derby levels of ladder match. And I don't think that would suit NXT. We haven't really seen anything in the way of like hardcore, really heavy hitting things. Even in the ladder match, the first ladder match between Bo Dallas and Adrian Neville, there wasn't a lot of, at least from what I can remember, a lot of using the ladder as a weapon. It was more Neville using it as a launch pad. So again, you don't need to have it to be a car crash to be a good ladder match.
No.
And Finn Balor is athletic and smart enough to be able to work around that ladder. So those are only two small asterisks I'm putting on my heart level, but I do think we'll have a pretty good match. As for the winner, as I said, at that set of tapings, Kevin Owens does come out with the NXT Championship. Now, that could be explained away in the backstage segment. They didn't show the crowd they're going to shoot later on, where he takes out Finn Balor and just steals the championship.
Yeah.
And just runs off with it. So that's pretty easy to explain. Or again, it could just be a red herring. So I think that Finn Balor's going to retain here for similar reasons to the Bayley and Sasha Banks match, just that I think Kevin Owens is now a main roster guy. They're not necessarily going to want to put a title on a main roster guy. So I think Finn Balor's going to retain here.
And you pretty much summed up exactly what I was going to say. My first concern is the fact that Kevin Owens is wrestling the next night. And I think they're going to be wanting to wanting him to wrestle a long match on the actual SummerSlam card. So we'll get to that in a moment. But I do believe Finn Balor will be going over, because not only for the reasons that you said, but also the fact that they've only just put the title on him. And I think it'll take some sort of the prestige away from the title if it just flip-flops between specials.
Yeah, I agree. And if Kevin Owens takes the title, they could always just have a takeover special again pretty soonish, and he can drop the title back. But other than Finn Balor, I don't think there's many babyface challengers ready to go right now for a Kevin Owens title feud. So I think it just makes a lot of sense to leave it on back. And you're right, you don't want to be ruining the prestige of that championship. Kevin Owens himself didn't have that longer run, but I think Finn Balor is somebody they're going to need to build around right now. Due to the lack of main stars, I think it's imperative they keep the title on him for the time being.
Last question on NXT. If Finn Balor does retain, who would his next opponent be?
That's a good question.
I threw that at you from left field. We haven't even talked about that.
There's some possibilities. I think the winner of the Joe and Corbin match could have a big say in that. I think Joe wins, that's logical. If Corbin wins, that could be like, well, I've killed everybody, I may as well face the champion. I know the cult of Full Sail will not enjoy that at all. They will be incredibly against that. But if there's enough time between this takeover and the next one, the title match could be on TV and then they could transition into Joe. I think Joe versus Balor has a lot more... would have a lot more hype behind it than a Corbin versus Balor match on a takeover show. So, yeah, I think I probably would say, if it's not going to be a Kevin Owens rematch again, I'd say the winner of Joe versus Corbin. If not, maybe Tyler Breeze perhaps could be a nice holdover feud before Tyler Breeze. I think Tyler Breeze is going to take the dump sooner rather than later, so that could kind of be his swan song feud, is to go and be Balor's second successful title defense. So that's what I'm thinking at the moment, but I've got no surefire answer for you there, Hayden.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that's your NXT card, and that's our previews and predictions. We're probably going to be completely and totally wrong, but we'll never admit it because, you know, we're stubborn like that.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, we just took a break to get ready for the SummerSlam card, and Triple H has just tweeted out the second half of the card for the NXT show. So we're going to quickly go through these. We haven't had any time to prepare to think about it or anything like that, so this is going to be completely off the top of our heads. So the first thing I want to say is that it's official that Apollo Crews is facing Ty Dillinger. They're going to have a big 8-man battle, by the looks of it, which is going to be Zack Ryder, Enzo Amore, Mojo Rawley, Colin Cassidy against Jason Jordan, Chad Gable, Dash, and Dawson. You go first, Darren.
Well, thoughts on the Cruz Ty Dinger match. That's slightly odd timing, since Ty Dinger has just had his relaunch as the Perfect 10, which he beat Solomon Crow, and I thought if anyone was going to go up against Apollo Crews, it would be Solomon Crow, because those two are buddies from the Dragon Gate days. At least I think it's Dragon Gate. He might be Evolved. No, it's Dragon Gate. They're buddies from the indie scene. So I thought they might want to tap into that chemistry straight away. But, you know, Dillinger has been a loser for the longest time. It's okay to stall his quote-unquote push for the special, so Apollo Crews can beat somebody and then we can get the ball right on that one. 8-man tag. Again, signs that they're trying to do something with the tag division. There's going to be two tag team orientated matches on the same show, which is always good. As for a winner, I don't know. Gable, Jordan, and the Mechanics have been shown to be the more capable teams. They've all traded wins with each other, basically. But maybe because they're in Brooklyn, they might let Enzo go over here. That's all I'm thinking on that front. So I might sit on the fence, but I'd go Enzo.
Isn't Zack Ryder from around that area as well? Or is he more downtown New York?
Well, he's... Well, as we're not American, we're not entirely sure. He's from Long Island, which is a part of New York State. And so, and Colin Cassidy's from Queens, so... Yeah, no thinking on it. I'm pretty sure the free New York people are going to pick up the win there.
And then we also have a fatal four-way between Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Emma, and Dana Brooke. I'm going to pick Charlotte in this one. I'm trying to come up with a reason.
Well, it makes sense the way they've booked her on the main roster, that she's kind of... I know they're trying to even Steven bookings during this Divas Revolution, but a lot of eyes are going to be on this takeover special. I don't see them upending it for Dana Brooke or Emma. So Becky Lynch maybe, but
saying that, the more I think about it, perhaps Emma's got more of a chance only because we've both predicted Bayley to be the champion coming out of this show, so she would need a heel opponent.
That is a good point.
And I think Emma would need the push from winning this four-way to get to that level to face Bayley.
The only problem with that is because Charlotte and Becky are on the same team and are meant to be buddy buddies, and Emma and Dana Brooke are meant to be on the same team and be buddy buddies, that's a difficult finish to book. You could have Emma kind of turn on Dana Brooke and kind of, you know, Dana Brooke gets flattened by a Charlotte spear. And then Emma just boots her at the ring and just quickly covers Dana Brooke and just said, oh, sorry, I was just trying to get the win, stuff like that. So, okay, there's ways around that. That's an interesting idea. But for the record, I'm still going to think they won't care about NXT. They'll just want Charlotte to go over. So I'll back Charlotte in this one.
Eva Marie versus Carmella.
Wow. let's hope that's a dark match. That's probably the highest praise we could give it, that we don't get to see it with our eyes. So they'll still be intact at the end of the match, which would be great.
If it is shown, I can't see them not giving Eva Marie the win, considering all the build that they've given her leading into NXT and on Total Divas as well. Unfortunately, Darren, I am a Total Divas watcher.
I know, but I've forgiven you because you're using it as a method to get your girlfriend into wrestling. So
exactly.
That is fine. All I've got to say on that point is, if you're going to put the greenest female wrestler into the ring, don't put her against the second most green female... Oh, actually, Dana Brooke. The third most green female wrestler you have available. That is asinine. Put her in there with... Natalya's not doing anything. Put Natalya in there. She got Charlotte to a good match and Charlotte was still awful. Maybe she can... Oh, passable. She can get something that's slightly below average out of Eva Marie.
It's going to be interesting, and it's in a strange way, I'm kind of curious to see it. Just in the sort of, I'm passing a car crash type sort of way. So I think Eva Marie will go over there. And then finally, Bull Dempsey versus Elias Samson. I'm loving the Bull Dempsey story at the moment. I know I shouldn't, but I think it's just fantastic.
I am too, and I don't know why. I know that everyone else is kind of, you know, they kind of cringe when they see the ball fit thing, but I found it funny. It's in terms of storyline, it does require Bull Dempsey to cut a lot of weight for it to reach its logical happy ending. And I don't know if I could see that happening, but I've got a kick out of it. Sue me.
I kind of enjoy it only because I'm going through similar at the moment. I'm trying to get fit. I'm fighting the fat, as I keep hashtagging on Twitter. And every time I'm in the gym, every time I'm doing cardio or wherever, and I'm running on the treadmill, I just got the images of Bull Dempsey in my head, and it just makes me smile and it keeps me going. So it sounds daft, but you know, we all like wrestling and wrestlers for different reasons. So do you see Bull Dempsey going over you?
I think so. Maybe they do another thing where he runs out of breath. I will admit, if it starts to become very overbearing in his matches, that is not something I'm going to be down with for very long. But I think they're not going to be crazy into this match, but hopefully they'll get a few laughs out of it. They'll be a little behind Bull Dempsey. If they were in the court of Full Sail, I think they'd be fully behind him. But in this situation, this feels like a lower card match, so I expect it to get about 2 minutes and for Ball to go over.
And that is the end of the NXT card, unless Triple H decides to send out a tweet.
Hideo Itami's back! Oh, you gotta do it again.
So we'll move on to the SummerSlam card. The first thing we need to talk about, I think, is Jon Stewart being the host. Thoughts? Because I don't watch the Daily Show, and I don't know a lot about Jon Stewart aside from his mini feud with Seth Rollins.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't think I've ever watched the Daily Show. Actually, we do get it. I think massively delayed on air Comedy Central we have over here, but he's enthusiastic. He's funny. So I'm okay with him. I think this could be a good spot for him. And if he does well, I think he could come back at WrestleMania like another celebrity on this card that I think could be able to do that.
I used to watch The Daily Show only because they had a comedian called Dave Gorman on there, and he was one of my all-time favourite comedians back when he was on the show. So I only used to watch his segments, so that's about as much exposure as I've had. I don't know if this is a celebrity he was on about, I very much doubt it, but the other announcement that they've made on WWE.com is that Jonathan Coachman and ESPN are going to be at SummerSlam, but they haven't specified in what role. Am I being negative, worried that they're going to do something involving Coach and Cole?
Well, I was about to say that I was never a Coachman fan, but again, if Roman Reigns is hinting that maybe The Rock will be at SummerSlam, I am more than down with some old school Rock taking the Mickey out of the Coach fun. That was always good. That was gold. So I am more than down with that if that happens. Otherwise, I doubt he's going to appear on the show. He'll be there in the ESPN capacity, but whether or not he appears on the show, I don't know. And if he does, it'll be cringeworthy unless Dwayne happens to be there.
And I was only being tongue-in-cheek slightly with the coach against Cole. So before we get into the card itself, same question as earlier with NXT. What is your level of excitement on a level from 1 to 10?
I'll give it a 7. I think they've earned that. I'd say I haven't really been into all the kind of post-WrestleMania pay-per-views, live specials, if you have to now call them. I've not been ordered into them, but they've piqued my interest just about the right time for this one. So I'm going to go at a nice, solid 7.
Before I put our set list together, I got to be honest, I was on about a 6, and I was only because I've had this thing about the fact that it's gone to 4 hours, and I didn't think they'd have the depth to fill it. But looking at the card itself, when I had it all written out in front of me, I was thinking, that's actually quite a good lineup. So I'm going to bump it up to about a 7, close to an 8, to be quite honest with you, because every single match has got a bit of intrigue as to what they're going to do and what's going to happen. And there's some matches that have the potential of being fantastic.
I'd agree. I don't think every match has something in it for me, but there's potential on this card for a lot of very, very good wrestling.
So we'll go through the card one by one. The first match I have is Rusev against Dolph Ziggler. Rusev's got to go over here, surely.
I hadn't actually given much thought to who could go over. Well, you've just had Dolph Ziggler have the hot return, and he did kind of leave Rusev lying. So taking that logical step, you could see Rusev going over here, if only to then set up the mixed tag at what I would imagine would be the next live special. This may be something I need to come back to when I've seen the kind of over-under on the heels winning, babyfaces winning. But you might have a point there. I'm expecting a good match, by the way. Now we can get all this stupid build out of the way. This god-awful fish-in-a-box just stupidity out the way.
That was going to be my next question, because It's been said elsewhere, but I don't want Rusev in this position. I want him to be the badass, the monster. But at the same time, he just makes me laugh so much. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter, but he put up a tweet. It was about a month ago, and he put up, Rusev's mom phoned, said she likes John Cena. Rusev has no mother, or something like that. And it's just absolutely hilarious. His whole character has just been so entertaining, but yep. It's not the character you should be playing at this point. And as you said, I'm just hoping that we can get past this story as quickly as possible between mm-hmm. him and Ziggler. At some point, Lana's going to turn on Ziggler and get back with Rusev, and then hopefully we can just forget about the 6 months in between.
Well, quite a lot to dissect there. I will say it's not a knock against Rusev. I think he's done well with the material they've given him. I just think the material's worthless. Mm-hmm. It's probably the best way to put it. I just don't think the writing team has been on their game in any way. Not helped by the fact that, you know, Ziggler was away filming a movie. That was poor timing in hindsight. But, I as for Lana going back to Rusev, I don't think that's going to happen, because I think they're really going to start building with Lana as kind of... Obviously, she's not part of the quote-unquote Divas Revolution right now, but I think they see money in her. I don't really share... I think she's okay. I think there's potential there. I don't really share the high... put her in such high esteem, but... I don't think she's going back to Rusev anytime soon. Nor do I think Summer Rae's going to stick around all that long. I'm fine with Rusev being by himself. And the main thing to remember here is that a good match can always overcome a bad build. It doesn't necessarily work the other way around, but I think these two will be able to put together a good match. Ziggler can always do it. Rusev has really, you know, kicked on the last 6 months. He's gone from someone I had a lot of doubts over to saying, no, he can... hold up his end of the bargain in these matches. He's more than capable of doing that. So I'm looking forward to it. This might be a sleeper hit of the show.
I saw Rusev again, Ziggler, in one of the UK tapings. Like, I can't remember if it was a Raw or a SmackDown. I can't remember if it was in Liverpool or if it was in London. It was some point in the last 18 months anyway. And it was really, really good. And on the higher level, on the higher platform that they got at SummerSlam, I'm same as you, I'm optimistic that they can pull out a sleeper for a good match. Yeah. The next match is Sheamus against Randy Orton for what seems like the 2 billionth time. What did you think about Orton getting the clean win over Sheamus on Raw?
I wouldn't read too much into it, because again, they've traded so many wins and losses of each other that it's kind of meaningless at this point. They could be going with the back-to-back Sheamus losses only for him to cash in Money in the Bank, because that is the perverse type of booking decisions that tend to float around the Money in the Bank briefcase. But of all the matches on the card, this is the one I'm least enthusiastic about, it must be said.
Me too. It's just, I never understand the logic of having the babyface going over on the show before the big show, simply because you've seen it. You've seen the babyface get the payoff. You can't get behind him to beat the heel anymore. And as you said, we've seen this match 100 times. So I'm just gonna pick Sheamus simply because booking logic 101. Orton got a win last Monday, and he'll get the win at the major show.
Well, I've kind of liked Dickhead Sheamus. That's a much better character for him. Ever since he's came back since WrestleMania with the stupid hair, it's been a much better fit. My feelings, or lack thereof, toward Randy Orton are well documented. So, you know what? I'm actually going to go against you. I think Randy Orton's going to win here. Not because I'm predicting a Money in the Bank cash-in success, but if you remember WrestleMania, Randy Orton was in a lower card match with the Money in the Bank title holder, beat him, and then he came out and cashed in. So whether that's a harbinger of things to come, I don't know. But the only interest of me with this match is, if there's any match that might get bumped to the pre-show, it might be this one. There's another one that I think could be a candidate that I really hope it isn't. But considering the amount of times we've seen this and the kind of these two are just having their little feud off to the side. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. I think this could be the one that gets bumped down to the pre-show opener.
You do realise that with the scenario you laid out, if Sheamus was to cash in his Money in the Bank at some point during this show, and he was to win the title, and Randy Orton beat him early on in the night, that would mean that Randy Orton would be the number one contender. We'd get some more Sheamus against Randy Orton.
I know. I know. I'm just trying to get into their heads more so than booking what I want to happen. I'd want Sheamus to steamroll Randy Orton in about 3 minutes, but I'm not going to get that. But they did that with Seth Rollins. It's a safe bet coming straight out the gates with the new champion, so that's what I'm laying down. Again, I'm not necessarily hinting that they're going to do a Money in the Bank cash-in, because I just don't think there's enough momentum or build behind Sheamus right now. Admittedly, there wasn't much behind Seth Rollins either when he cashed in. But that's what I'm going for. Move on.
Watch out, Darren. It's a Divas Revolution. We've got. Do you like that intro? Do you like that intro?
I like it more than the Divas Revolution.
So we've got Team Bella versus PCB versus Team Bad. The first question I have is, it's an elimination match. Have they established if when one member of the team gets eliminated, does the whole team get eliminated? Or is it essentially a nine-woman elimination match?
Oh, I hope it's not a nine-woman elimination match, because that's going to take hours. Well, I hope it's the one pinfall means your team's out scenario, because that's useful for two reasons. One, you can have a long match where you haven't got to do rapid-fire pinfalls that kind of belittle the effort that you've put into building these women for the last month or so.
Like they used to do with the lightweight or the cruiserweight division.
Yeah. They come in, you know, you'd have your quick, oh, he's in with finisher pin, quick move, transition move, finisher pin, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That will undermine everything they've done. For better or for worse, what they've done, it will undermine all of it. So I can't see that happening. Plus, if you have that, that creates storyline seeds. If, you know, they, let's say, Tamina takes a pinfall for Team Bad, then you could start to maybe break Sasha away because she's like, well, you lost the match. I'm better than this. Da, 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 da. We can start to move on from this initial faction war and maybe have an actual Divas Revolution. There's an idea.
Where the women have got personalities and characters of their own.
This is what I don't get.
Or am I just dreaming?
This is, right, I can't remember who said it. It's escaping me right now, but someone pointed out that all they're doing is hyping their gender. They're not hyping anything out about these women other than the fact that they're women. They haven't pointed out that they're all great characters, or they've occasionally mentioned that they're okay wrestlers, but they haven't really gone to town. It's just the fact that they're women and they're getting more time. That's all they're bothered about highlighting.
And so why would the casual fan care about that?
Exactly. It's vacuous and empty. If they're trying to do what NXT did, they're not doing what NXT did. They clearly haven't been watching NXT all that closely, because they took their time, they built slowly, and they gave you three-dimensional characters for you to cheer for. Couldn't have a Bayley situation on the main roster under these current circumstances. I can't see people dressing up as Charlotte and crying at ringside because Charlotte has won a match.
And that was the point I was going to make, is the fact that what it feels like is that they're trying to take what NXT did and put it on fast forward, you know? They're trying to get there before they've even set it all up. So who do you think is going to win? Which team? If we're going to say that it's team eliminations.
I think Team Bad goes first, and then I'm going to put my smart booking hat on and say that Team Bella will lose, Nikki Bella will take the decisive pinfall, and whoever pins her will get the Divas title match next week, on the next live. What is the next live special, by the way, after SummerSlam?
Is it Night of Champions?
It is, because they had Lesnar on it, didn't they, last year? So you might be right on that one, because I think they went straight to the Cena-Lesnar rematch.
And that would make sense as well if Nikki takes the pin and whoever pins her gets the match. Obviously,
yes,
Nikki's the champion. So I was going to say Team Bella, but I completely and totally agree with your logic. So I'm gonna agree with you there. The next match is for the Intercontinental Championship between Ryback versus Big Show versus Miz, which was originally supposed to be on the was it Battleground?
Yes.
Pay-per-view?
Yes, I believe so.
And they hyped this by having one man from the three squashed one of the other from the three on Raw. Could they have built this up less better?
Good English. No, maybe they were still they were on the bubble whether Ryback was going to be able to get back for SummerSlam, so they didn't give it their full attention until he got the 100% you are clear to go. But no, they couldn't have really done a worse job. I did forget about this match, actually. So this is another candidate to be bumped to the pre-show opener. Because considering the work they've done to build up the United States Championship, and I know they had a lot go wrong with the IC Championship plan, in that you had both Daniel Bryan and Ryback going down to injuries during their reigns, but yeah, this I could not think of three more people I'm more apathetic to, other than Randy Orton, than the three people in this match. Miz is a consummate loser, Ryback has just never really done it for me, and Big Show is played out at this point, so this will be my toilet break.
I'll be honest, I was actually looking forward to seeing this match at Battleground, and I was quite disappointed when obviously Ryback went down with the injury. But since then, they've completely lost me. I've got no interest in this match, and when I thought my interest level was at the lowest it could be before Raw, they completely and totally made it even lower. So I'm going to say Ryback retains, because I don't see Big Show holding the IC title, and I certainly don't see The Miz at this point holding the IC title, because, as you said, he's being portrayed as essentially a jobber to a point, and I just don't think they'd put the title on him at this point. The next match, and I've got a feeling I'm going to have the opportunity to go for a little wander while you have a talk about it, is the championship four-way tag title match between Primetime Players, New Day, Lucha Dragons, and Los Matadores.
You could have said it's the Primetime Players versus New Day versus two also-rans. Wow. How the Lucha Dragons, and especially Los Matadores, have earned themselves a title match using any type of logic is beyond me. I think they're trying to do a WrestleMania thing of getting everybody on the card. By the way, I did check Night of Champions is next up, so all the Diva stuff is prudent and right to say. Back to this match, though. I think I'd be a lot more jazzed if it was just New Day versus Primetime Players, because that feels like the storyline that everyone's into. To be fair, they're not into the storyline, they're into New Day, but that seems to be the focus, and these two just feel like third wheel teams that are kind of just there. So I think those two are not going to factor into it much. My hope is that they put the titles back onto the New Day, because the Primetime Players have just been some of the most like boring afterthought champions in recent memory. They have had nothing given to them with those titles. They just have a big lump of metal they have to carry around now. It has meant nothing for them. The focus has not shifted one iota from the New Day, so I really want to see them get, because if the New Day lose again, then where do you go with your tag division?
Brought on the same hand, if New Day win, who are they going to feud against?
Well, okay, then you could take time to maybe build up the Lucha Dragons. You can obviously have the Primetime Players rematch be first, but then you can give to the Lucha Dragons time to build up. They could send up Enzo and Cass. I know they had a dark match and they're not necessarily ready for this, but that could be a thing. Whereas if you leave it on the Primetime Players, are you really going to be all that much into Primetime Players versus Lucha Dragons or the Matadors or Ascension? It doesn't make sense. I think I really need to put this back on the New Day.
And it's such a shame about the Lucha Dragons while we're talking about them, because when they were first called up, it was around about just, I think it was just before or just after WrestleMania, and I was in London watching the Raw taping, and the crowd was so behind them. You know, it was a fresh new tag team, and you know, they were exciting. They got the crowd on their feet, and then they just took them off TV, and then all of a sudden they're just throwing them into a tag title match, and I just don't understand the logic between not having a competitive and compelling tag division, because it gives another element to a card. And as you said, I would have much preferred for primetime players to just face New Day, and that would have been a more compelling match.
Yeah, you couldn't give a more damning statement than saying that in 6 months they've taken the Lucha Dragons from hot new Lucha tag team, filling that all-so-important Lucha Hispanic slot in the card, and now they're no better than the Matadors. That takes effort, concerted effort, to cock up that badly. So I think they can be rebuilt. It's not too late to go and, by any means, to go and save the Lucha Dragons. I just think it's important, because if they don't put it back on the New Day, you then risk stifling their kind of momentum. Because I think people, they're not starting to get ironic cheers or anything, but people are starting to enjoy that act. A lot of wrestling commentators I follow on Twitter are just saying, yeah, I'm into SummerSlam for so-and-so, so-and-so, and the New Day. So, and they've been very entertained. I think it is the right time to get it away from the primetime players. It has done nothing for the act, and give it to people who can add value, and for now, it is the New Day.
But do you think the crowd would pop if New Day won the title? And would that undermine their whole character and their whole shtick and the entertainment factor that they're bringing at the moment?
I don't think so. Not yet. It's going that way. If they keep being this entertaining, they will become cool heels. But I think for now, they're still annoying enough put it this way. I don't think primetime players retaining will get a pop anyway.
No.
So no one's going to be cheered coming out of this match. But I don't think they'll get cheered. A few ironic cheers, but I think the majority will still be booing them.
We also have a tag title match. See, as I was talking about tag titles, we have another tag match, which is Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper versus Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns. Is this as simple as Wyatt and Harper go over on Ambrose and Reigns, and then that sets up Wyatt against Roman Reigns and Harper against Ambrose down the line?
That's interesting, because that gives the view that you're seeing this as kind of a stopgap between those two feuds, because those two feuds were kind of going on anyway. I know they kind of cool on Ambrose and Harper for a while, but they have been at each other's throats up to and after WrestleMania. So that's an interesting thought, but I was thinking more, I agree that Wyatt and Harper are going over here. Maybe due to Eric Rowan running out or whatever it will be, but they've been dropping a lot of signposts towards Roman and Dean are really good friends. And when they start doing that in their ham-fisted nature, that makes me start to think, well, maybe Dean's about to turn.
I can see the logic in terms of, As per usual with WWE, the heel side seemed to be quite weak, and I think the heel Dean Ambrose would bring something to that side of the roster. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't think they played out the Bray Wyatt Roman Reigns feud at this point yet. And I think if you have an Ambrose heel turn on top of that, it sort of muddies the water too much. I think that there's going to be a Bray Wyatt Roman Reigns match down the line. Possibly coming out of that feud, it could be that Dean Ambrose turns on Roman Reigns, but I don't think he'll be in this match.
Okay, I think both are valid ideas. I'm just kind of spitballing. That is by no means what I want to happen, because I think it's disastrous for both people. Dean Ambrose is a big babyface right now. In fact, he might be the most over babyface they have. I know he's not the highest on the card, but he's definitely the one getting the 100% babyface reactions every time he goes out there. And I think then to turn that someone that popular in opposition to Roman Reigns, who you're already having problems getting over, that's detrimental. I think the best thing they've done to kind of, you know, make Roman Reigns 2.0 coming out of his loss to Lesnar is his friendship with Dean Ambrose. Just, they're starting to like him by association. The boos have definitely gone down. And it's normalized him a little bit. He seems like a likable person because he's with his bro. I really like the chemistry they have going on there. So I think it would be disastrous to turn Dean Ambrose. I'm just throwing the idea out there. But yeah, as far as winners and losers, I do think Harper and Rowan will come out with a win.
And I do completely agree with you. I do think Dean Ambrose will turn at some point. I just don't think it'll be at this match. I think it'll be a case of when Bray and Roman face each other one-on-one, Ambrose is the reason that Bray wins that match, which means that you've got Bray Wyatt then able to actually win a feud, and then you have Roman Reigns with a ready-made feud against Dean Ambrose, who will be a hot heel at that point.
Well, to that point, you could say that that could go down in this match, and they could have Roman Reigns not beat Wyatt, and they could be smart, knowing that Roman's going to be champion sooner rather than later. It seems to be the general consensus. Then you have a ready-built feud for Bray, where he says, "You have never beaten me one-on-one." That's a good feud to go into. You've then got Roman Reigns, junior champion, and a major heel player finally in Bray Wyatt. So I don't think, now I'm thinking about it, there could be a way for this, for them not to have the Roman beats Wyatt concluding match.
It's certainly going to be intriguing. I'm looking forward to this match more for what happens at the end of the match as opposed to the actual quality of the match, because I don't think it's going to be as great as some of the other matches, shall we say.
I disagree. I'm kind of looking forward to this match. It's Wyatt's versus Shield again, and they were always good. I know you're missing Rollins and Rowan, but again, if you're going to take any of the three out of the Wyatt, it would be Eric Rowan, and I think Dean and Roman can deal just fine without Rollins, so I'm really looking forward to this match.
Got to agree to disagree on that one, I think, my friend.
Okay.
The next match, which contains a celebrity, is Stephen Amell and Neville versus Stardust and Wade Barrett. First of all, why is Wade Barrett involved in this?
Because they needed a tag partner. Maybe Goldust is injured. That would have been the logical choice. I know they just had their, you know, Stardust and Goldust had their breakup deal, but 6 months memory span is common in wrestling, so that would have made more sense to me. But I don't know, he's a king, he's wacky, he'll be down with this. He's now the Cosmic King, of course, after Raw.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, given the big cloak thing, which looks badass.
When I watched that, I knew you would like that. I knew. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my god, Dan's going to be talking about the Cosmic King.
Do you know what's over? Capes. Above all else. Neville has one. Barrett has one. Just great.
Is it all English people have to have capes? Do you have a cape? Are you wearing a cape right now?
I don't own a cape. I could throw my bed sheet over me. That could be a cape, but I don't have one to hand.
This audio is going downhill quickly, I think.
That implies that it started at the top of the hill, Hayden. Let's not give ourselves too much credit.
Are you intrigued how Stephen Amell performs in this match? Because he is quite athletic, and I think, obviously, he's not a trained wrestler, so it's not gonna be chain wrestling or anything like that. But I'm just with his athleticism, I think they can get a good match with him involved.
I'm incredibly intrigued because I'm a huge fan of Arrow. Which doesn't seem to a lot of people on this, especially on the contributor side, that are kind of into Arrow. Are you, by chance, Aiden?
I'm into Flash. I'm a big, big Flash fan of the new TV series, and there's obviously a lot of crossover between the two. So based on the crossover, I have actually bought the first series on DVD of Arrow. Mm-hmm. And because my girlfriend is the same as me, she loves Flash, we are going to sit down when I'm home for a weekend at some point, and we're going to just blitz through the first series of Arrow. So potentially, I could be an Arrow fan.
Sweet. Well, I've followed it from season one. I'm just saying, season one is good. Season two is in my top 10 TV series of all time.
Oh, wow.
Season two is incredible. Just the rise and escalation is fantastic. Season three, not so much, but yeah, you're going to enjoy yourself. Yeah, I am super hyped for this match. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. Ever since I first saw Amell walking around with a WWE title belt that he won in like a fantasy football draft he had, I've been excited for, hopeful that some kind of an incident like this was coming around. So when they finally announced the match, I was super hyped. I think he's going to be fine. Obviously, Neville's going to do the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
But I think he'll be able to come in and do it. He did a nice job on Raw. I think he's going to be more than capable of coming in and punch, spear, maybe something off the top rope. Like, he's fond on Joe Arrow of, like, coming down on the zip line with his bow and then kind of giving him a flying kick. Maybe they'll pull it that. I just want to... Oh, I'm really hoping for a Grant Gustin running. That would be awesome. Like, everyone's down. It all looks horrible. And then the lightning bolt comes on the screen, and then Grant dashes out in his costume. I hope it's full costume for Stephen Amell, by the way. I don't think it will be with rights and stuff, but that would be over. Anyway.
I think it's going to be as simple as you said, Neville does most of the match, and then it's a hot tag situation, and he tags in the mail. Do you think there's any chance that Stardust and Wade Barrett come out of this as winners?
No, but let me just throw this out there. I actually had a conversation with someone at work today. He's into wrestling, but not the same level as you and I are. He's got like a casual enjoyment in it, but... he said, and shout out to Shahid if you're listening, stay cool, bro. He said he was like, oh, I really want it to be a one-on-one match between Stardust and Stephen Amell. And I tried to explain, like, no, they've got to protect the business. They can't just show an actor come in there, and you can't show Stephen Amell beating Cody Rhodes in his first match as an actor. I agree that can't happen. You have to protect the business. But, I then thought, this kind of, my brain kicked in again and said, okay, there is a way you can do it, and this is how you could do it. And this could factor in a Stardust win at SummerSlam. Let's say he beats him, and Amell's like, this isn't going to stand. I challenge you to a match at WrestleMania 32. You know, what are we, 9 months out? And then what you do is, periodically over that 9 months, you show Stephen Amell training. It could be with Neville, it could be with anybody. He could show up at the Performance Center. And you just plant these seeds all the way down the year that Stephen Amell is training. He's actually doing wrestling training. Whether or not he is, it doesn't matter. So you plant those seeds, right, all the way up to WrestleMania 32. That's when you have your one-on-one match. How you keep Stardust relevant for 9 months, I'm not entirely sure, because I don't think there's much legs left in that character. But no. You could do that, and that could be your celebrity match for WrestleMania 32. They've taken the time to show that Stephen Amell has learned. Again, if you're going to think logically, 9 months training as a wrestler is not enough to beat, you know, a 10-year veteran like Cody Rhodes. But I think that's how you could do it. Get to that singles match, and then you have Stephen Amell win.
I do like that idea. I don't think they'll do it. I do like that idea in theory. But as you said, I think there's too many buts and
schedule.
Yeah, exactly, and also, as you said, the Stardust character hasn't got much left beyond this. But going back to this actual match, I personally think it's going to be Stephen Amell and Neville to take the win after the Red Arrow.
You think Stephen Amell's going to do the Red Arrow?
No, not at all.
Wow,
that would be awesome.
No, I think Stephen Amell would pick up the win. I don't think they'd let Neville.
Oh no! I mean, after Neville hitting the Red Arrow, and then Stephen Amell coming in and doing whatever,
doing a splash or something. Yeah. Oh, he bounded over the ropes. I don't think a springboard move is completely out of the question if he's had time to practice with a crash mat.
Possibly.
That could be a thing. He's an athletic dude. Have you ever seen Arrow when he does the salmon ladder, which you have to look forward to, by the way? I do not suggest watching that with your girlfriend, because she will get serious envy. Because it's amazing. So. Yeah, I'm super hyped for this match. It's probably the best inclusion I can get.
Excellent. And the second time we're going to be talking about this man, Kevin Owens against Cesaro. How much are you looking forward to this match?
A lot. As long as Kevin Owens isn't beat to hell following the ladder match the night before, this has the potential to be the dark horse. This could steal the show for me, because they both have great work rates. They've shown great chemistry in their brief flashes they've had against each other. Up to this point. So, yeah, this is going to be the sweet Ring of Honor match sat in the middle of the WWE card, and that is two thumbs up from me.
I can't really add more to that, to be quite honest. It's going to be hard-hitting. They're not going to hold anything back. I do worry that coming out of this, both men need the win.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after Kevin Owens losing the Cena feud, and Cesaro seemingly losing every single week despite having great matches. So that's the only thing that I worry about, is I don't know who would benefit more with the win. I would probably say Kevin Owens, because if they're telling the story with Cesaro in terms of his losing streak and it's going somewhere, then it's a natural progression. But I don't think they're doing anything with Cesaro at the moment, apart from just seeing him as a good hand in the ring to have fantastic matches.
See, I don't know Because he's starting to get the crowd behind him in a major way. It's not Daniel Bryan's levels by any means yet, but it's this is where the Daniel Bryan's push starts kind of started. They saw that he was better than everybody else in the ring, and they started to latch onto that. So they could try and squash that, but that didn't work with Daniel Bryan. If anything, it just emphasised the push. All right, this is a match dependent on all the other ones, I think, because I haven't been keeping track of my babyface heel over-under, which I like to do. But so that could factor in. Plus, if there's going to be screwy finishes down the line, that could screw up what is my ideal ending for this, which is actually kind of a screwy finish. You get them out of there and then figure out a way for one of them to win on the next show. The thought I just had was you could make a triple threat for the IC title, which is Owens, Cesaro and Ryback, and then one of them can win the IC title. That's a big win for them. Gets away from the stale situation the IC title belt's in right now to give it to one of these two. So I think there's a way both men can come out of this benefiting. If it's not a screwy finish, I don't know. They do both need wins right now.
If I give you 10 quid right now to put a bet on, and it's going to be a clean finish.
Yeah.
Who would that £10 be put on?
Owens. That's based on nothing but just sheer gut instinct that I think that they'll put it on Owens, and then that will they'll actually be counting on it to just double up the Cesaro support, and then they can move them away from each other and go and build each other, you know, far away from each other. So yeah, I'm not entirely confident on that one, but I'll go for Owens.
I'm leaning more Owens because I'm predicting he's going to lose the night before as well. I think.
Oh, that's a thought. What about that?
Although the whole audience won't see both shows, a lot of people will, and especially if with the capacity crowd as well. You want to make sure that Owens looks good coming out of the weekend, essentially. So that's the only reason I'm leaning more towards Kevin Owens, if there's a clean finish. And I do hope that the Cesaro losing streak, if that's indeed what they're going to play up, leads somewhere. The next match is John Cena against Seth Rollins in a champion versus champion match. How many bones are going to be broken in this one, Darren?
You'd like to think none, but those Seth Rollins knees, man, you could never tell what's going to happen. Or Cena's nose could just re-break itself, because nose can fix itself that quickly.
Not even Super Cena's.
No, so that thing could explode at any second. But
oh, that's a visual I don't want to think about.
This is a really intriguing match, considering it's title versus title. If it wasn't, I'd be more inclined to a simple retain for whoever's title's on the line. But title versus title throws up, you've either got to go a screwy finish, which I think people will be expecting and New York will not react favourably to, or you have to go for a double champion, which I'm never all that keen on. It's working in Ring of Honor at the moment, but they took a lot of time to get there, and I don't think either of these people will be well suited as a double champion.
There's two points I want to make with this one. First of all, as horrible as it sounds, if John Cena hadn't broken his nose in the match that they had on Raw a couple of weeks ago, I wouldn't be that intrigued about this match, only because we'd seen it a couple of weeks ago on Raw. Because of the broken nose, in a morbid sort of way, it's made the match seem more grand because of that. My second point is, I think the end of this match depends on what they do in the main event, because if they are planning a clean finish in the Taker-Lesnar match, then they can get away with a screwy finish in the Cena-Rollins match. But if they're going to go with a screwy ending to the Taker-Lesnar match, you can't do it in this match. For me, even though this means in the main event it's going to be a clean win for someone, I think the only way they're going to come out of this is having some sort of screwy finish, because I don't think Cena with the title at the moment is money. I think him continuing his US challenge is where you want him to be at the moment. And I don't see what you could do with Seth if he wasn't the champion at this point either. So I'm leaning towards a screwy finish of some sort. I don't know how, but I'm going to lean that way.
I think that's the easiest way of the corner they've booked themselves into, kind of needlessly, to be fair. Because if I was going to pick, right, if you had to have a clean finish, I have to pick between two evils, two things I don't actually think are the right thing to do. Cena winning the 16th title carries a lot of meaning with it. He then enters the records book as tying the record, and then you have to believe that they will then want to go and... Put it this way, if he wins the title tomorrow, which is for Saturday, if he wins the title at SummerSlam, he's still got a lot of years in front of him, and I cannot believe they're going to go what could possibly be even like another 10 years without giving him another title shot. So I think that's where they would go.
I've got to screw with you though, Dana. Sorry to interrupt, mate, but does it really matter that much, that the 16 title in this day and age, only because of how often they flip-flop the titles?
Not necessarily, but it feels like, not to put it on this level, I'm not trying to do that, but just to try and explain my kind of awkward feeling towards it, Ric Flair's 16 title reigns is kind of similar to Undertaker's undefeated streak. That's his legacy. That's the thing that he can hold on to. That's the thing that makes Ric Flair will live on anyway, but that's kind of his the crown jewel is the 16 title reigns. There's other ways for Cena to be given a hallmark of that distinction that isn't taking that one off Ric Flair. But again, I do think it will eventually happen, because there's just that amount of time in front of John Cena that I can't see him going that long without being the champion again. Now, the interesting thing that could come from that situation is they could unify. Cena could choose to unify the US and the WWE title into each other, and that's how you get back to being the IC title being the undisputed number two belt. That is a good outcome of this, possibly the only one in my opinion. So if I was going to pick between the two evils, it seems like I would have to go with Seth Rollins as both the WWE and US title, and I don't put that much stock in Seth Rollins. He's done very well with his WWE title reign, but double champion is a distinction I say for the best of the best of the best. And Seth, I don't think he's there yet. Potential to be that, certainly, but not right now.
Just a thought that popped into my head as you were saying that, and I haven't thought it through, so it might sound stupid, but wouldn't it be more of a heel move to merge the titles together? If Seth Rollins was to win both the titles, and he was to say to John Cena, oh, you coveted the US title so much, I am just going to just do away with it and merge it in with my WWE championship.
That's a solid thought. That could put some heat on Seth, which would then eliminate the problem of being a double champion. He wouldn't be a double champion anymore. He would be... See, there's a hallmark for Seth Rollins. He was the guy that unified the WWE World Heavyweight Championship and the US title for the first time. So that could be his hallmark. That could make sense. But again, I don't see him as a double champion if they don't go down that route and they do keep him as two separate titles for like merchandising, because there's a lot of US title belts out there. It does serve a purpose on the card, so you can have a lot of different champions and on the house shows. But again, this is the problem. Are we going to get to this problem again in the next match? There's no outcome that I think I could give a solid thumbs up to.
But on the flip side of flipping the negative of that, I find it an incredible positive that we've been talking for however long we've been talking about both SummerSlam and NXT, and we both follow the industry quite closely. And although we can sort of predict where we think they're going to go, we're nowhere near, on most matches, 100% sure of what they're going to do. So for me, that kind of shows how intriguing this card is at this point.
That is a very good point. I agree with you there, but I think, again, the problem with this match and the next match we're going to talk about is Yes, we're not entirely sure which way he's going to go, but that's because both outcomes are not something that on paper seem to be a smart decision. They could come out of this with the greatest storyline ever written that just you think, oh, this was a genius move, but considering the writing standards of today, I don't see that happening. So hopefully I'm proved wrong. I like to be proved wrong occasionally, and they'll come out with a solid goal plan. But if this isn't a screwy finish, you couldn't get me to endorse either win at the moment.
We can't put it off any longer. Undertaker against Brock Lesnar. I've written a blog about the possible outcomes, and as I was writing it, I was putting myself in knots, trying to work out what I think would be a good outcome or why certain outcomes wouldn't be great. I just don't know. At this point, I still don't know. I promised in my blog that when I did my predictions, I would be able to give a solid answer and give reasons for that. And I just can't. I literally don't know how they're gonna make this work. And as I said, that fascinates me.
Just to return very briefly to the match before, I don't think we actually gave who our predictions are for who might win the WWE United States title. So it just occurred to me too. So quickly, again, if you gave me the tenner and told me to put it on somebody, I'd always back the John Cena horse because you always back the John Cena horse.
I'm going to back Seth Rollins. Only because I can see them using the whole nose injury to give Cena the out. And I think that's... It's either going to be a Seth Rollins win and the nose is going to come into play, or... You don't say that very often. Or it's going to be a screwy finish of some kind.
Okay, we've covered that ground. Let's get back. Well, as far as this match goes, there is an outcome I'm shading towards, very slightly. I think, again, they've booked themselves into a corner. This one wasn't as unnecessary as Cena versus Rollins was, because I do think this is a big match, and the outcome I'm going to predict does lead to something down the line. In terms of match quality, I'm really not sure what to expect, because we were expecting not amazing things, but good enough things from the WrestleMania match, and, you know, Taker got concussed, so you have to take that as it is, but... I'm not expecting a 5-star classic.
No, neither am I. I'm expecting a lot of bells and whistles in this one to try and work around, because Brock hasn't really been in a match where he hasn't been the dominant person in it, and I don't think he can bring that style to the Undertaker. Partly because of the mystique of the Undertaker, and partly because of how beat up Undertaker's body is at his age. So it's going to be interesting to see Brock trying to work a full match again, in a way. As we're talking, I'm trying to think which way I would lean with this match, because there's so many outcomes. There's a lot that I don't like. There is one thing I do want to say, and although this match is intriguing and it's on the marquee and it's selling SummerSlam, I don't think WWE have done as good a job as they could have, simply because although we've heard from The Undertaker, we don't really know what his beef is. As far as we know, he's just a poor loser.
Yeah, he's just the underkicker now. That's what he's did is he came back as Dick Kicking Undertaker, and I'm all about that. I was all for him replacing every move with groin kicks, but they kind of humanized him for the first time in a long time, in that they gave him like an actual beef that wasn't "I want to drag your soul" and da-da-da-da. He was like, "You beat me and I want to beat you." There was more to it, but that's the broad strokes to it. That you took away the streak from me. So the rivalry kind of writes itself almost in the minds of all the fans watching it. But
what did you think of the promo on Raw on Monday?
The Paul Heyman sermon.
No, the Undertaker's '90s throwback.
I drown it out whenever. I am a huge Undertaker fan. He's top five. But whenever he starts to go into all the macabre dead man over the top stuff, I just tune it out. He's just white noise to me. I can't stand it. I really can't. So the Paul Heyman sermon to the his fiery god of retribution was much better.
Before I forget, I'm going to tell you a story now about something that someone told me. One of my friends came up to me and said, I've worked out something that like you probably haven't worked out. I was like, oh, okay, go for it. And he said, The Undertaker's still undefeated at WrestleMania. I was like, no, he's not. He lost to Brock Lesnar. And he went, no. What they did is that they brought back the fake Undertaker, and he lost to Brock Lesnar. So we're going to find out next WrestleMania that the Undertaker is still undefeated. And I just looked at him and just went, what? What are you talking about? There are people like that out there, people.
They are streak truthists. So, okay, it's all a conspiracy theory. Now, the streak did end. What are you talking about? Well, ignoring that suggestion, in search of our own in this match, I have a stronger feeling towards an outcome than I do in the Cena Rollins match, in that I think the worst thing they could do would be to have Brock Lesnar lose. Even if Undertaker goes full heel and delivers 20 straight kicks to the dick, I still don't think Brock should lose this match. I really don't. So I think there is a storyline to tell in having Brock beat Taker. And you set up Taker for his, last of the Cowboys type of ride to the sunset, which we all think is coming at WrestleMania 32. If he loses, he starts to question himself and say, am I, can I still get it done? You humanize The Undertaker for one last time. You have him be like, can I get it done anymore? I need to prove that I can, I can still do this. I am still better than this. And if I can't, I will retire. And then you set up a match at WrestleMania 32 for him to retire in. He can either win and then just say, I won my last match and I'm off, or you can have him lose and retire. I think that is the storyline to tell. I don't necessarily think it's great for The Undertaker's mystique, but I think there's more money in Brock's right now. Undertaker's not going to be around any longer than at maximum a couple of years, and even then that's highly questionable. There's more money in Brock right now, so they can't have him losing to The Undertaker.
The first time I heard that scenario in terms of Undertaker losing and then going on to WrestleMania, I hated it. I was thinking, that doesn't do it for me. But the more I thought about it, it seems like the only logical way of making money from this down the line, because if Lesnar defeats The Undertaker and then you have the redemption story and the feel-good story at WrestleMania 32, then it negates any negatives that come out from Undertaker losing this particular match. So for that reason, I'm going to join you on the Brock Lesnar bandwagon to win this one clean.
I just think there's more, because let's say that Undertaker wins, then what is your storyline with Brock? I don't think there is one coming out of it other than you have to start doing something with Heyman, and that is not what I want to do. I don't want to see that partnership break up. That is how Brock Lesnar has got over and stayed over. He's almost entirely down to Paul Heyman's speeches and German suplexes. That is what has got Lesnar to the point he's at now. I just think, here's an example of what they could do, just to throw this out there, two hypotheticals they could have done. Say they hadn't done the Bray Wyatt match last year at WrestleMania, and Undertaker had not been seen until he turned up at Battleground to attack Lesnar. You could then have the same storyline play out where, Bray's like, I am the new face of fear and I will beat you. And Undertaker in his last, his last bout takes down the new face of evil and leaves. Or you could do Bray Wyatt versus Undertaker again, but this time Bray Wyatt wins and does become the new face of evil. That gets you a new major heel. Almost a like-for-like replacement. I know that's saying a lot, but
yeah.
You're taking steps towards having your like-for-like replacement for The Undertaker, which is a big void to fill. One they haven't been able to fill for a while now, which is why they have to keep getting the poor man out of retirement or semi-retirement to come and have a WrestleMania match. So there's potential there for a lot of storylines. He could have the match with John Cena that everyone's kind of been throwing about in their head for a long, long time. It just feels like that's the only way they could go right now, because if they do go Lesnar losing, I really don't know where that can go. And if he does go anywhere, it's not to a good place.
So, using the theory of the tenner, I give you a tenner, and it's a clean win. Is it going to be Brock?
Yes.
And I agree. And I think we're going to close the show out on that note. So, have you got anything else you want to say, Darren, before we leave?
No, other than, you know, check out all of the many various podcasts you're going to be hearing this week that you can get for a dollar price on the .NET membership sale. Go and check them all out. You'll be hearing myself and Hayden. You would have heard myself and Hayden on the Ring of Honor podcast already by the time this goes live. I'm hopeful to be back again today on Saturday with NXT TakeOver Brooklyn coverage with Zach Zimmerman as well. And I'm really looking forward to SummerSlam. I'm not entirely sure when I'm going to be able to see it, because if this had come a week later, we have a bank holiday Monday that would have been tailor-made.
That'd have been perfect.
For watching SummerSlam all day long. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened, so I'm going to have to avoid Twitter for 24 hours to make sure nothing gets spoiled. But yeah, I am hyped for this show. I'm glad they've put the effort in. I hope they do the same for the lagging Survivor Series, which, I do usually prefer to SummerSlam. So I'm looking forward to a good weekend of wrestling.
Excellent. And you can join Zach Zimmerman, who's going to be joining Jason Powell for the ProWrestling.net Live show tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Monday, Jason Powell is back again with Just Incredible, former ECW champion, at 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. on Monday. And on both shows, they will be live, so your phone calls will be welcome. I'm going to close out now, but just by saying enjoy SummerSlam. And if you want to speak to me, my Twitter is at Hayden Gleed. And Darren?
You can find me at The Guttridge. Please also do check out www.theguttridgedog.co.uk, my own personal website where you can hear my fantastic audio review of the Fantastic Four.
Cheap plug. And on that note, we'll close out. So enjoy SummerSlam, guys.
Tally-ho.